Seven Bridges Golf Club is one of the best-kept secrets, and just a half-hour drive from Chicago, a scenic, challenging, and rewarding course. Seven Bridges offers daily fee play with a private course feel, and it's home to DuPage's best 19th hole, the Dock Bar and Grill. Book your tee times today at sevenbridgesgolfclub.com.
Live from State Street in the heart of Chicago, you are listening to the new home of the Chicago Bears, ESPN Chicago. And this is Waddle and Sylvie, WMVP, WSHE, HD2, Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
All right, let me give you a recap of what's going on. First of all, the Cubs game tonight has been postponed. There should be rain in the area a little bit later. I know the Cubs were still working out now. But the Cubs and Marlins will play in a doubleheader on Saturday. Tim Anderson was back in town. He had some interesting things to say. Jesse will keep us posted on that in just a little bit. We've got some sound for you to play on that. The Cubs do return to town with a 5-4 road trip in hand. I thought that was a pretty good trip, all things considered. They had a couple of really bad bullpen meltdowns. They blew an 8-0 lead against San Diego, where they lost 2 of 3. So you get behind the eight ball starting off that trip 1-2, but then you win series in Seattle, and then you win a series in Arizona, including a game where you led 11-8 in that game. So you come back 5-4 from a really, really tough road trip, a 9-game trip where you finish 5-4. I remember when Phil Jackson was coaching the Bulls that would win 70 games. He used to say, look, I just want to go 500 on the West Coast trip. So you're the Cubs, and it's early in the year, and you're without Steele, and you're without Tyon, and you've blown a couple of games with a bullpen, and at the end of the trip, Saya goes down. And you still find a way to go 5-4 on the trip?
Good trip.
That's a good trip in my book. So I will absolutely take it. The Cubs are above 500, and maybe they can get on a roll here. And some of the bats can start, you know, reaching. I thought Bellinger was starting to come out of it at the end of the road trip, and maybe
Horner
some
was
others
as well.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll talk to Jesse here in a little bit. If you missed Barstool Big Cat about an hour ago, entertaining as always. All of our great conversations with guys like Barstool Big Cat. We had a really great conversation with AJ Przinski about the White Sox. All that stuff now lives not only on our podcast, where you always get our podcast on the ESPN Chicago app, wherever you get our podcasts, but on our brand new YouTube channel. We're really building that thing. We thank you for that. If you have not gone there yet, subscribe to it. It's really easy. Go to just youtube.com/@Waddle and Sylvie. Tyler showed me too that it's even easier if you just have that YouTube app on your phone. Just go to the YouTube app and just search Waddle and Sylvie. And then when you're on the Waddle and Sylvie page, just hit the subscribe.
Listen, if I can do this, anybody can do
this. Did you do this?
Yeah, I have it right there.
Look
at that.
You did it?
Then I go to
the little. Did you subscribe?
Yes. And then I go to the little magnifying glass and I just type our names in and boom, there you go.
But you subscribe to it. Are you sure? What, Tyler, is he subscribed?
I don't know if he's subscribed, but he knows how to readily access it.
Yeah, let's see if he's subscribed. Walk him through this here. Go in there, Tyler.
I don't know if I subscribed.
So you were just telling me you subscribed.
I don't think you have an account.
I don't know if I have an account. I have it on my phone.
He found where our YouTube page is.
I can access our stuff.
He can access our stuff.
Yeah. If I can do that, anybody can do
it. So easy a Waddle can do it.
Yes.
Okay, so if you can at least do that, or if you know how to subscribe.
Baby steps.
Subscribe.
Yeah. Did I subscribe?
I think we got to build you an account.
Okay.
Build Waddle an account. All right, let me take Sean and Mokina, because we were talking again based on Carmen's Olive Garden visit, and then Red Lobster came up on Crosstalk Unhinged, and then Waddle brought it up on Waddle's World, which is also on our YouTube page. Every day, Waddle's World is there if you miss it. Sean was wanting to talk about all-you-can-eat stuff. What's up, Sean?
Hi, guys. As always, thanks for letting me share the air. I'll go into the two-minute drill.
Sure.
So many, many decades ago, too many to count, my buddies and I, there was an all-you-could-eat Chinese smorgasbord that we used to go to. Before going in, we'd sit in the car and smoke bong hit after bong hit after bong hit. it looked like when you open the doors, it looked like Spicoli getting out of that van in Fast Times. You know, the smoke just pours out.
Nice.
So we'd go in, and we would just go insane. They literally sat us next to the buffet, and we demolished the place. My two friends were like 6'6", 240.
Oh,
they were
boy.
Big guys. I'm only 5'8". But they would just eat meat, meat. We did this almost every weekend for about 2 months until the owner finally said, that's it. No more, guys. You cannot do this anymore.
I don't think that's
then,
you can't do
sorry,
that.
Well,
I said you can't do that.
It's a private place.
Come on.
It's his business.
Well, we thought the same thing, but we were so young. I mean, I was 18 or 19. We were kind of intimidated a little bit. The guy was yelling at us, you're not welcome here, you know, no more. We were just like, all right, whatever. But let me tell you something. The best shrimp toast I think I've ever had in my life.
Oh, yes. I love shrimp toast, too. Hey, Abigail says great for shrimp toast in Highland Park.
Yeah.
Have you had shrimp toast before?
I have not.
It's not like it's shrimp and then it's breaded. And it's not actual toast.
How much of that can you really eat?
When
you
start breading it, it's very heavy.
Yeah, but
you ate a lot, Sean?
Oh, yeah. I was more of a pot sticker and Kung Pao chicken guy.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But my buddies, they went to town on the sweet and sour chicken and the shrimp toast. I mean, trays of the stuff, like you get it, you know, at a buffet. They would just reach over, grab the spoon, and put it on their plate directly. We were that close.
We used to go to, I've told Waddle this before, back in college, this is when Wendy's had the super bar. Do you remember when Wendy's
had
like...
bar?
It was more than just a salad bar. I think they had tacos on this.
Really?
It was a hot bar, too. And only on Sundays they had the Wendy's Super Bar. And we would go and we would bring books there, and we'd be there for hours on a Sunday night.
And they
night.
Didn't have a problem with
and
it?
No, all you can eat. Yeah, and we'd just sit there for hours and just eat and eat and eat.
Wow.
And when we just start, you know, studying them,
I would
too.
Assume they have a plumber on call as well if you've got that thing going on.
We weren't like you, though.
I don't care. It doesn't even have to be me. If you just start overeating, you're going to tax your system and something bad's going to happen.
Matt in South Carolina, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Matt?
Hey, I used to work for an Australian-themed steak restaurant that is very popular.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
That had an unlimited shrimp add-on.
On the bottom.
So if you bought an entree, you could add unlimited shrimp. And the first serving that you would get would be 14 shrimp. And every refill after that would be 7. We had some guy who came in, he bought a steak, never touched a steak. He had the original 14 shrimp, and he had 44 refills afterwards of 7 shrimp each.
Get out
of here, 44. That is 322 shrimp.
See?
The guy was about 6'8", 325. He looked like an offensive lineman.
Did you ban him?
No. I wish we could have. We all wanted to, but the...
Did you take him out back?
No.
The regional manager was there, so we couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
Well, how much does a guy like that tip?
I wasn't the server, but I think it was just a regular inline 15 to 20% tip.
How long was he there?
About 5.5 hours. Like, literally, we were closing, and we actually offered to make him more shrimp to take with him just so he would leave.
That's awesome. Listen, you honored your promotion. That's great.
Oh, yeah. And it's a great story to tell, and it's fun to talk about it. So I earned great that night. I didn't have to serve him.
Right. That's fabulous.
That's amazing. Hopefully the Bears' offense is that good. With, like, scoring touchdowns, you know, in sevens.
Yes. That'd be great.
Matt, good stuff. Thanks, thank man. You.
Thank you, gentlemen.
There's Matt. Let's go to Jesse Rogers right now. Jesse, are you still at Wrigley Field?
I am. And I got to tell you, what's the saying? You show up to a baseball game, you might see something you've never seen before. Both teams took batting practice. The Marlins are still out there after the game is postponed. I've seen many a time taking batting practice, then the game gets postponed. But both teams practicing after it's postponed, I've never seen before. It's kind of wild. The whole Marlins team is out on the field right now.
That is weird. Jesse, brought to you, as always, by your Chicagoland Toyota Dealer Association, Toyota Let's Go Places. For those just tuning in, too, the Cubs game has been postponed. And then the official thing is this is a day-night doubleheader on Saturday, correct?
Yes, yes. They were never going to go, you know, back-to-back games. One ticket, no chance, right? Not on a weekend. So it's 1:20 and 6:40 on Saturday. I'm actually a little surprised they didn't cancel it this morning. It's rare to come back from the West Coast and not get a day off. I mean, it's very rare. I can't remember the last time. You usually get a day to, you know, get your time, your clock, you know, that whole thing back. And they didn't have a day off. So I'm surprised they didn't just cancel and tell the guys not to come. But there's a day game tomorrow, now two on Saturday. So what I'm thinking is both teams are taking the only batting practice they're going to take all weekend right now. So it's kind of wild. Batting practice today with no game, and I'm guaranteeing you no batting practice the next couple days with day games. So kind of strange they didn't do that. But maybe, I talked to one coach. He's like, no, I wanted to bring them in today. So maybe they had a feeling this was going to happen. Interesting for us reporters, Craig Counsell did not talk to the media before the game. I don't think there's anything behind that, although I think they have some decisions to make, and maybe Craig wanted to punt it a day. You know, they're sending down a player for Taillon. They're sending someone down for Wisdom. It looks like it's going to be Wisniewski and Mastroboni. They haven't announced that. But the bigger thing is what they're going to do with this rotation. Does everybody just get pushed back a day? What's happening with Kyle Hendricks? I think they're just kind of figuring these things out now. They have an extra day to do that.
What do you expect the decision to be about, Kyle?
I don't think it's going to be an injured list stint. I don't think so. I think it's either going to be let him pitch against the Marlins instead of the Rangers, the Dodgers, the Diamondbacks, give him a chance with a soft landing at home where he's usually good. That's one, or skip him once. I think those are the two options. I think they might skip him once, or they might just let him pitch. On Tuesday, I reported that Ben Brown wasn't going to leave the rotation. Now I'm thinking, you know, it's possible for at least one turn he might. Hendricks gets the start against the Marlins. Ben Brown ready to come in relief of him possibly. And then we'll see what happens after that. Hopefully it's a good problem moving forward, all these healthy pitchers. But let's put it this way. If he has another bad one, then they have a tough decision to make. If Taillon's decent enough, you know, with one start, you know, coming up here, and Steele is back around the corner, they may not give him the 6 weeks I thought they would give him. Now, there's always another injury around the corner. Something always happens, right, when it comes to pitchers. But all things being equal, the pressure is definitely on Kyle Hendricks in his next start. And I do think he'll make it because it's against the Marlins at home.
So, like, I just felt that Ben Brown, when they brought him up, he had, that first start against, or it wasn't a start, it was
relief,
in relief against Texas. He was a little, the nerves were going a little bit, and that's when he had the not-so-good performance. But I think there's been three since then, sort of like it was sort of a start, but I think Luke Little started the game, and he came in the second, was good. And then he's had two starts since then, and they've been good. Why take him out of the rhythm that he's been in if he's been helping the team win?
I think the answer is going to be the fact that he's already been back and forth a little bit. You're not taking Imanaga out. You're not taking Taillon out. Hendricks would be the other option, but he's never pitched out of the bullpen. If you're trying to fix Hendricks, it's probably better that he starts. I think the answer is just simply that Ben Brown can do it because he's been conditioned to do it this year. You know, the difference between Ben Brown and Kyle Hendricks' stuff is kind of interesting because they're both right now two-pitch pitchers. Ben Brown is a fastball, curveball pitcher, and he's having success because his stuff is so good. Hendricks is a changeup sinker pitcher, and he's having no success because his stuff isn't very good. He's hanging a lot of pitches. He either refuses to throw his curveball or doesn't trust it. I know people around him want him to throw that a little bit more. So he's searching. His stuff isn't good. Well, Ben Brown, it's the exact opposite. He knows exactly what he's doing. So if he's out of the rotation for one turn, I think it's just one turn because they can't afford much more of this out of Kyle. And I was a guy just a week ago saying, you got to give him a chance. And that might be the case if he was on the Marlins. But he's on the Cubs with some other good starters, and they're trying to win something here. So I do think he gets another start, maybe two, but not a lot more than that if he continues to fail.
You mentioned the Marlins. There's a familiar face in town, a friendly face in town, isn't there, Jess?
Yeah, it was really interesting. I was talking to the Marlins PR guy. We're talking, of course, about Tim Anderson being back with the Marlins. signed late in the offseason for, I think it was $5 million 1 year, obviously trying to recoup, you know, get back to who he was a few years ago. And what I was talking, you know, the Marlins PR guy, I mean, there's no media around the Marlins at all. And there were 30 members of Chicago media in the Marlins locker room, so he got a kick out of that. Tim was, would he talk? Would he not talk? He did. He came over to the corner locker, and he held court for about 10, 12 minutes, just summarizing a few things, and then we'll play a little bit. He said that, yeah, he had leaving on his mind because he kept asking for extensions year after year, and they never came. So he thought about leaving, as most players do as you approach free agency. He definitely understood that it was time to, quote, them go their way and for me to go my way. He understood that. He says he's in a better place. He's happy. His smile is back. But then he got to this point where I asked him what happened to the White Sox after 2021. Here's Tim Anderson.
A lot of my decisions as well, you know, off the field, you know, kind of interrupted with a lot of things as well. We understood that. And it's hard to, you know, it's hard to win when you don't have the right guys to go out and compete. You know what I mean? And that want to win it. But, you know, that don't have anything to do with with where we are now. I'm only looking forward. I'm not looking back. You know, I wish them well. But I'm going to continue to keep, you know, trusting my process and, you know, continue to keep going and growing.
And he also said last year took a lot out of him. And then he said one decision messed that up. And you look, he was vague about it, but for our listeners, just to remind them, he had off-the-field problems with his marriage. That is what he's referencing when he says a lot of my decisions off-the-field interrupted things. So that was TA today.
It's amazing. We've talked about this in recent times. I can't remember somebody who's fallen so fast, so quickly from a level of where he was. Like, he was the face of changing too. The game.
But KB didn't make the WBC. Tim Anderson made the WBC Team USA last year. And yes, he was even asked about the whole change of game thing. And he's like, I hope I impacted it. You know, young players having more fun and stuff. But that kind of died a little bit, I feel like. But just the idea that he made Team USA at the beginning of last year and was praised. You guys talked to Mark DeRosa. I mean, and then to fall like he did. I mean, I think, Sylvie, you said it so right. Guys struggle. You need an organization around you to help pick you up sometimes. And the White Sox certainly didn't have that for TA. But he made his own bet. And he said that today, and I give him credit for at least admitting the off-the-field stuff impacted him.
Something that caught my ear in that soundbite was, too, like, he was saying you can't win when you don't have some guys around you who, like, Mellor, play that again, and I want everyone to listen to that part, too. I don't think it's a big secret that everyone talked about their bad culture last year, and maybe you can circle some guys. But I want, Jesse, to listen to this, and then I'll ask my question.
A lot of my decisions as well, you know, off the field, you know, kind of interrupted with a lot of things as well. We understood that. And it's hard to, you know, it's hard to win when you don't have the right guys to go out and compete. You know what I mean? And that want to win it. But, you know, that don't have anything to do with with where we are now. I'm only looking forward. I'm not looking back. You know, I wish them well. But I'm going to continue to keep, you know, trusting my process and, you know, continue to keep going and growing.
Hard to win when you don't have the right guys to go out there and compete.
Yeah.
That's indicting on the entire organization. Who do you think he's talking about?
Yeah. I think we do know. I think we do know. I think it's the guys that are perennially out of the lineup. TA was out of the lineup as well. I will say this, you know, since 2020, I was around the White Sox a lot. You know, I've written about it, talked about it. TA, there was an arc with him. He was kind of thrust into a leadership role because he was so good. It's a reminder, just because you're great, not necessarily a leader. But he was kind of thrust into that role, and it didn't really work out. So he kind of receded into the background. And I will say this, going back to last year, remember I would say his locker was in the corner and he was kind of off on an island. He was not a plus or a negative culture-wise. He just was there. There were other guys much more of a negative. So I will give him credit. He didn't ruin that culture. He didn't. He didn't add to it as a great player over time there. But he didn't subtract from it. There were other people subtracting. He was just a body in that room last year. But that still is not a compliment towards him. He had a terrible year, and he didn't recover from it at all.
Remember a couple of years ago when they announced he was going to the All-Star game and you heard, like, no response?
Yeah. Golf clap.
Muted golf
clap. I remember, Tommy, you pointed that out. Yeah, I think that's all telling. It's all telling. And like I said, I will say, I don't think he was a big negative. I don't think he was getting in other people's faces and causing problems. Look, I think we could say it. Like, Lance Lynn and Joe Kelly and some of these guys had a problem with some of the other guys that were out of the lineup a lot. And there were... This is why half of them were traded, but the other guys weren't traded because they were under contracts and nobody wanted them. So, I mean, we've gone through this culture thing for a long time, and I just put TA as kind of neutral in that. I just wish he played better. Like, for Sox fans' sake, I wish he had played better, but he just did not bring it, in part because of off the field problems.
I promised Waddle I would read him the Pedro Grifol quote from yesterday. James Fegan was the one who tweeted out the picture of the lineup. And then all the optional stuff that the White Sox had on their lineup, he deleted that tweet. And then he explained the reason he deleted the tweet was because he didn't put it out there to show all the optional stuff. And he thought a lot of people, they were taking it out of context or whatever. So he then asked Pedro Grifol to explain all of that. And he posted the quote yesterday as to how he responded to that. And I'll read you the gist of it. And he says, I just want to bring a little bit of education to it. There are 162 games in this season, and we have people in there that track workload on a daily basis, and they're really good at it. That's all they do all day long. They track workload. They track work capacity. Detraining, overtraining, they do all that all day long, right? In this particular case, we just worked them out, a full workout, on Sunday at 10 o'clock in the morning. And we put optional on Monday. Everybody showed up, so it was almost like another full workout on Monday. So we put optional again on Tuesday, just in case somebody felt like they needed the day off. On the sports performance side, we were good, but we gave it a day to where if somebody needed to do something else, they could. There's always going to be something. And then he goes on and on. He says, optional just means whoever needs the day, take it. It doesn't happen every day. It won't happen every day. It's just a way of giving guys the opportunity to take a day when they need it and trusting them to prepare themselves to play. But rest assured, there's people that do this for a living in there and track workload, track detraining, overtraining. So when there's optional on the board, that's for the reason. And I can guarantee you this, 30 clubhouses, there are 30 optionals on the board at some point in time and another during the season. How do you feel about this and about Grifol's explanation?
It's a long one, that's for sure. But actually, he's not wrong. It's funny because I am actually writing about this topic like in a month, but I've done a lot of interviews. I did them in spring training. This idea of load management, a phrase you don't hear so much in baseball, but in other sports. And he's not wrong. They do have people, every team has people tracking, and pitchers are easy to track, you know, how many appearances, stuff like that. With hitters, position players, they track how many times did you take off from first to steal? How much running did you do on the bases? How much running in the outfield? And there are heat maps. And, you know, Joe Espada, the Astros, told me in spring training, Alex Bregman lives in the red zone. Like, he's always in, the, you know, he needs a day, but he never takes it. There's a lot of truth to what he's saying. There is a lot of truth.
Well, if you're never on base, how often do you really need a break?
Right,
Jeff?
Right.
I mean,
but it's interesting how they measure acceleration and if there's a lot of 3-2 pitches and you're running off of first, you know, stuff like that.
I would just say, look, you could compare yourself to 29 other teams, but are the other 29 other teams having as many soft tissue injuries year after year as you? And so. And is all the other 29 other teams 3-15?
No, of course.
So like I would just say maybe you should look within before you start pointing a finger and at the other teams and say maybe you should start doing your stuff better.
Yeah, and I would say this: Pedro just puts his foot in his mouth too much. That's the thing. Every turn when there's an important question, he just answers it poorly. I mean, go back to spring training when he was asked about Fangraphs giving them a 0% chance of winning. He, like, had to push back in a very aggressive way to, and now he looks silly because right. they do have a 0% chance.
Like again, if Aloy's not getting hurt again in the first week of the season, and then they don't put him on the IL, and then they put him on the IL, right. and right. then if Moncada's not getting hurt, and if Robert's not getting hurt, then fine. No one's questioning the optional. But the problem is with this team, these guys keep getting hurt, and their fans just want to know why, and then when they see optional stretching, they're like, are you effing kidding me? Well, the team that keeps pulling muscles isn't stretching mandatory?
And if you have optional hitting when your team collectively is batting 175, maybe a couple guys could use a few extra cuts in the cage.
Yes.
But the biggest problem is what I've said to you before. I know you're right about all that, is what they do in the offseason. Moncada and Luis Robert got to stop staring in the mirror, and I'm using, you know, I'm just making
right,
a joke
about the muscles,
right? And start training for baseball. What I read a scout's text to Carmen last week. There's nothing wrong with a little fat on you. There's nothing wrong with. I looked up. John Kruk had like two injured list stints. One was for testicular cancer. For right. God's sake, like, you know, I mean, there's something to that, but that happens in the off season, and that's another failure. Of the White Sox organization, not convincing them to work out differently instead of doing the way I've talked to even pitchers who are, I was Steve Wilson of the White Sox right now. He was telling me when he was in college, he used to squat and do all this stuff to look great. And he had to have Tommy John because he was too tight. Like you learn over time. If this isn't working, if I keep getting injured, I need to change something. And those players never have.
Good stuff, Jesse. Thank you.
All right, boys. Have a good one. Talk to you later.
Jesse Rogers at Wrigley. The game, though, has been postponed. Doubleheader on Saturday. Day-night doubleheader. All right. Let's give away these Bears draft party tickets exclusively at Soldier Field. It is a sold-out party. We will be there in a week, broadcasting there.
Unbelievable. It's a week away.
I don't feel like it's already here. We've been talking about this for months. It's about time that it's already here.
Sort of like the trade of Justin Fields? Or different? Just feel different.
Like, I'm ready for them to make the pick, and let's go. Let's move. All right, so here's the question. This is going to be, I think, a little harder. It's a pair of tickets for the Bears draft party a week from today. Make sure you can go. 312-332-3776, first correct caller. Bears have the 9th overall pick in this year's draft. The last time the Bears selected 9th, who did they draft? The last time the Bears selected a player at 9, who did they draft? 312-332-3776. Give us the answer, and we'll tell you who the answer is coming up next, plus Aki's A-List.
It's time for Aki's A-List. From the mind of the man who understands the 4 P's of Waddle's world, Aki's A-List. The top questions and topics floating around in Tyler Aki's mind.
Are these really the questions that I was called here to answer?
Aki's A-List on ESPN Chicago.
Before we get to Tyler, let's get the answer for a trivia question. The last time the Bears drafted at 9, who did they select? Sort of a tricky question, maybe. Maybe you weren't tricked at all. Mike in Des Plaines, what's the correct answer?
We drafted Leonard Floyd.
That is correct. Well done, Mike. I guess that maybe a lot of people would have said Darnell Wright, or would have thought Darnell Wright because they had the 9th pick last year. But if you remember, they traded down a spot and they drafted at number 10.
Yes.
Philadelphia moved up to number 9. All right, Mike, we'll see you at the draft party at Soldier Field. Are you excited?
Oh, yeah. Can't wait, guys. Can't wait to see you there.
Because you sound like you're asleep.
Long day at work.
Yeah. All right. Well, get some rest, man.
But perk up now. So this is a nice little surprise. So
awesome.
I appreciate it.
Right. See you in a week.
Hold on. We'll get your information. Didn't he sound like he was snoozing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of our buddies was drafted at 9 overall as well.
Brian Urlacher. I think it was just the anniversary.
Would you be surprised to know that there's only been 4 Hall of Famers that were drafted 9th overall in the history of the NFL draft?
What is the average amount of Hall of Famers selected at each spot?
It's a really good question, and I'm not 100% sure. Yeah, I think just at first blush, it sounded light to say, hey, there's only been four guys in the history of this sport that were drafted ninth overall that found themselves in the Hall of Fame.
I'll tell you what, though. I think if you get like 5 to 8 Hall of Famers in a draft, that's like a good draft.
Yeah. How many Hall of Famers are there total?
I just looked it up. This is before this year's class. So as of the class of 23, there's 371 members. But that might include coaches, too.
Sure. So you split it with all when you go with players?
Yeah.
Four sounds pretty good.
That's what I mean. You have to put it in perspective. At first blush, I got this little nugget from Larry Mayer, who I was reading an article on the Bears website about it. At first, when you first read it, you're like, there's got to be more than four players that have been placed in the Hall of Fame that were drafted ninth overall. But you're right. When you do the math, it's not that surprising.
The 1964 NFL draft has the most with 11 total Hall of Famers from that draft.
Interesting.
Just let's get our number one. As long as the first overall pick this year gets into the Hall of Fame, I'm good.
Oh, that'd be fabulous.
I'm good then.
Yeah.
I'd be really good.
If you had a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yes. Oh. All right, Tyler, what do you got for us?
All right, this was on NFL.com earlier today. They proposed three win-win trades with first-round picks, and one came with the Chicago Bears making a trade with the defending champion Kansas City Chiefs, in which the Chiefs would receive that ninth overall pick we were just talking about, and in exchange, the Bears would receive the Chiefs' first-round pick this year, 32 overall, their second-round pick this year, 64 overall, a 2024 fourth-rounder, so this year's fourth-rounder, 131st overall, and a 2025 first-rounder. I ask you this. What is the furthest back you would be willing to trade in the first round if you were moving out of 9?
Mid-teens?
I don't want to go back to 32.
Me neither.
And again, I don't even want to trade back at this point because if, in fact, the quarterbacks are all taken 1 through 4, you're picking 5th. And you're going to find somebody.
The only way I'm trading back is if Alt and the neighbors and Adunze and Dallas Turner are gone. Those four, I kind of like. I've in my mind, and I'm no draft evaluator, but those four have been talked into me as being the difference making guys. And then you've kind of got the next cloud of guys of offensive linemen and edge rushers. And then I feel like if I move down into the teens, I could still get a good offensive tackle or edge rusher. And then so I'm good there. But if one of those four is on the board at 9, I'm drafting one of those.
I'm adamant about staying at 9, especially if the quarterback rush is on. Because what ends up happening is guys that are really, really, really good players at other positions are pushed later down the draft board, and they make them more available. And if you could come out of this draft with your quarterback of the future and a difference-making player, whether it's a wide receiver, a pass rusher, an offensive tackle, I mean, I don't want to move out of here.
Do you agree with me? If Joe Alt is gone,
okay,
Dallas Turner is gone, the edge, and both Adunze and Neighbors are gone.
So I'm assuming also the Marvin Harrison Jr. is gone as well.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Those five are gone after the quarterbacks then.
Well, that means that one of the quarterbacks hasn't been taken then, right?
That would mean one quarterback still on the board.
Still on the board.
Right.
Yeah.
So what would you do?
Then I would contemplate moving back.
Then you would move back.
Yeah.
Well, especially because it's a quarterback spot. Somebody could come up and give you the Vikings or the Broncos in a little bidding war there. Yes. Like, that's a wanted commodity.
At that point, if only three quarterbacks have been taken, then you probably can leverage that ninth overall pick for more.
Or else one of those guys that the four should be available. Just because of math, because of the four quarterbacks being taken.
But if there's only three quarterbacks been taken, and in your hypothetical, there can't have been four quarterbacks taken. Right.
But then I'm saying if four go, then one of those guys will be available.
Yes, and I'm not moving because one of those guys can be a difference maker. So I'm hoping that there's a quarterback rush.
So interesting proposition from one of our friends of the show, Daniel Jeremiah. He brought up the possibility of Chicago trading up from 9 to 6, not to take Marvin Harrison Jr. or any of the receivers, but to take Joe Alt. Does trading up for Joe Alt interest you guys at all?
What am I giving up?
It says ideally for a 2025 pick slash pick swap.
So you're giving up a pick. That would be, is that the Chargers pick is where he has
six
him going
is the
to
Giants.
Six?
Giants.
That's Giants. Chargers are five.
Like, again, it depends on what the cost is.
I'm not going to rage. Again, if you tell me you're trading up for a guy that you know is going to be your left tackle for 10 years and is going to be great, or, like, again, you know how I feel about Marvin Harrison, that if you're trading up for Marvin Harrison Jr. and he's going to be a stud as well, I'm not going to rage against either move of trading up. I don't love giving up draft capital, but I believe those two guys are going to be stars, and I can't rage against that. I want to take as much risk out of drafting as possible.
Yeah, I wouldn't rage against it either, but if I can get Roma Dunze at 9 without giving up any draft currency, I'm fine with that. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is the best overall wide receiver, but I don't believe the drop-off is that significant that I'm going to regret the day that I didn't move up and draft Marvin Harrison if I can get Roma Dunze at 9. So, right, but I wouldn't rage against it. I mean, I'm not going to rage against it. But I wouldn't give up the draft currency.
An interesting article in The Athletic, they used a computer model to rank all 32 rosters ahead of the NFL draft. Now, here's part of the shtick with it is that it's your current roster ahead of the draft. So the Bears do not have Caleb Williams on their roster. They do not have whoever they would land at 9 on their roster as well. The Chicago Bears slotted as the 25th best roster in the NFL. Knowing that that does not include a quarterback,
yes, right.
Is this a good thing or a bad thing for the state of the roster as a whole right now?
It's neither good nor bad, but I understand it. They're ranking it without the most important position on their team when a lot of these other teams have a quarterback already. They have no quarterback on the team except Tyson Bagent.
They also got the Rippon kid.
Brett Rippon, yeah, they got Brett Rippon.
Come on, don't undersell Brett Rippon. I would still think they'd fall higher up the list. I don't think they're
without
complete.
A quarterback.
I don't think they're complete, but
now here's
well,
the
who's
little,
ahead of them.
Here, well, it's last
who's
in
behind
the
them?
It's last in the NFC North.
I understand that.
Teams that are slightly ahead of them. Basically, I'll go all the way up to 20.
Timeout.
The Vikings don't have a quarterback either.
Well, they have Sam Darnold. That's better than what the Bears
okay,
have.
Okay,
right?
That's fair. Good retort.
So the Saints are 24, the Vikings are 23, the Steelers are 22, Bucks 21, Patriots 20.
The Bucks. Look how far the Bucks made it. Yeah. And the Bucks are at what, 20? 21?
21, yeah. Behind the Patriots.
The Patriots?
What? Yeah.
Who's their
quarterback?
Here's the Jacoby Brissett. Ooh. And I guess this model is higher on Jacoby Brissett than others. Now, here's the little write-up on the Chicago Bears. I think this is a tad low, and the future looks bright in Chicago. The offensive skill positions are good, and the offensive line has potential despite not ranking too high in the model. The defense turned things around in the second half of last year, and if they can upgrade the edge rushers and interior defensive line, their linebackers and safeties are strong enough to make this a very good defense.
Yeah, that doesn't worry me whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm not.
I'm not raging against it.
No, that would be an exercise in wasted energy to get upset about that.
Yeah.
Let me squeeze in one quick baseball one here. So yesterday, Michael Busch had another run batted in. He's been off to a fantastic start this season. But so has Shota Imanaga for the Chicago Cubs. He has yet to allow an earned run this season. Who is the better Rookie of the Year candidate in the NL? Is it Michael Busch or Shota Imanaga?
This is cake or pie, as you like to say.
Yeah.
That's your cake or pie thing.
And a little early for cake and pie. It's like having cake and pie both in breakfast.
It's three starts for Shota, and it's been every day for Busch, so I'm going to go Busch so far.
I'm always going to go with Busch ahead of
what? Well, I mean, these days, are you really going to go with Busch?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm Michael Busch. Like, he had a big single yesterday, too. Like, it's not just the home rate. He's batting over 300. I like what Michael Busch has been providing them.
When's the last time you had a Busch beer?
It's been a long time.
Tasty.
Is it like from the Anheuser-Busch, obviously, umbrella?
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, they, yeah. Okay, well, have
this
one.
This is another one of the, okay, it's time to draft articles. Yeah, Bill Barnwell's all trades mock draft.
Yeah, to pay that off on the other side.
Okay.
Because I also have a branch out on something Tyler asked regarding the roster question. 312-332-3776. Jeff Joniak is also going to join us coming up at 6.
Ah, commuting in Chicago. If you're stuck, stick with Waddle and Sylvie. Weekdays 2 to 6.
So I saw that Jesse texted us about the Cubs rotation. Kyle Hendricks is going to get another try at this.
I didn't get that text.
Cubs pitching 419 through 21 just announced. Tyon on Friday. Saturday's doubleheader. Assad and Shota. We don't know which game each will start. And Sunday's starter for the Chicago Cubs, Kyle Hendricks.
Yes, the Sunday special.
So we don't have Ben Brown yet. No Ben Brown in the starting rotation as of now.
Might as well, if you're going to give him another start, give him a start against a minor league team.
Give him Sunday against the Marlins.
Yeah.
So there was that. Also, one thing I wrote about today in Shaw Media and the column about some of my requests on where the Bears, who the Bears take at number 9. You know, we've talked about this on the air, Waddle, where I've said, like you, I want the Bears to stay in the top 10 at 9 or to go up because I believe they won't be drafting in the top 10 for a lot of years if they're good. So I want a blue chip player. It racked my brain to remember the interview that we had with Bill Polian when Poles was first hired or when he was about to hire Poles. And he told us a contender must have 10 to 12 blue chip players.
Mm-hmm.
So I was starting to think, well, how many? Because this is another chance to get a blue chip player. They're going to get a blue chip player, hopefully, in Caleb Williams. That's the hope. And if he's not, then you're in trouble. How many blue chip players do the Bears currently have?
Well, okay. So again, this is subjective. Like,
right.
Everyone's definition.
Like top 5 to 7 players at their position. Like, let's go top 5 to 7 to make it a little more open ended.
I don't think Montez Sweat is top 5 at his position.
I think, like, I'd call him a blue chipper, though.
So would I.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm just
saying,
that's why,
like, I kind of said 7. He's paid that way.
My thought of a blue chip player is somebody who is in that elite group. I don't know if he's 1 or he's 7, he's 4, he's 6, whatever he is. He's an above average difference making player. I think Jalen Johnson is one of those guys. I think Montez Sweat is one of those guys. I think DJ Moore is one of those guys. I think I can make a case for you that Keenan Allen is still one of those guys. And I think that's kind of where, for me, that's where you stop.
That's what I wrote. I wrote, those are my 4.
Yeah.
With a chance that Brisker is on the way, that Gordon is on the way.
Could be, but not there yet.
And that, you know, TJ Edwards, you know, it's a position, like, he's really good at what he does.
But nobody's ever going to confuse him for, you know, Fred Ward or
right.
Warner or.
And that they hope that Darnell Wright will be one day a blue chip guy.
Yeah.
But he's not there yet. And you hope that Caleb Williams, but going on the roster stuff, when you say you need 10 to 12 of these, they're still shy in that area.
No question.
And that's why they need, to me, when everyone keeps saying, I want more picks, they still, in my book, need more stars.
They need more difference makers. My hope is Tyreek Stevenson will find himself in that category.
That's a good one, too.
As will the safeties that you mentioned. Kyler Gordon plays a really important position in today's NFL in that slot corner. My hope also is that you'll get Tremaine Edmonds will, you know, play the game at that kind of level. I think TJ Edwards is a fabulous player. If he's not a blue chipper, just a step below. My hope is that you add a wide receiver that's going to be a blue chipper, or you add Joe Alt, who's going to be a blue chipper, or the other defensive end you may draft at 9 is a blue chipper. Like, I'm at this point, I know I don't have a ton of picks, but you have an opportunity to really swing and make contact here because you've got your quarterback, and here's hoping he's good. And you also, because of the run on quarterbacks, you're going to have an opportunity to draft a player at a position that is important to you that I think can make a huge difference early as well. This isn't like maybe next year in the draft. Maybe the draft next year, there's six or seven really good players, but then there's only one quarterback. That's where, I mean, you don't know how the configuration of a draft is going to go. This one is falling into place nicely for them.
All right, let's talk to Jeff Joniak. We will do that coming up next.